Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Friday, November 26th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered in my over 47 years of doing therapy. These tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and listen to Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that particular chapter in that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 17 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any experience of a negative emotion into part of the infallible guidance system that each one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Just click on the link, download it, print it off, copy it, and use it as often as you'd like. There's also a host of audio files of shows you can download, audio files of shows just like this one, where people have either been stepped through that worksheet process or given powerful testimonials about how the application of that tool, active application of that tool in their lives, has created great benefit. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. And if you tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And we help people do that soon and often because that often creates comments, questions, or requests for support in doing a worksheet. And if you have any of those, give us a call at 563-999-3581. Call that number, press 1, and we can have a conversation. We're also doing the Course in Miracles workbook lessons this year. Today is the 330th day of the year. Today's lesson simply reads, I will not hurt myself again today. The commentary reads, let us this day accept forgiveness as our only function. And in this work and in Michael Rice's work, the word forgiveness here means the dismantling of whatever is not real. The dismantling of or detachment of the energy we pour into the illusions and the distortions that we create. Why should we attack our minds and give them images of pain? Why should we teach our minds, that is, that they are powerless when the Creator holds out its power and its love and bids them take what is already theirs? The mind that is made willing to accept the Creator's gifts has been restored to spirit and extends its freedom and its joy as the will of the Creator united with its own. The full self, the whole self, the larger self, which the Creator created, cannot sin and therefore cannot suffer. Let us choose today that whole self be our identity and thus escape forever from all things the dream of fear appears to offer us. Creator, your offspring cannot be hurt. And if we think we suffer, we but fail to know our one identity and we fail to share it with you. We would return to it, our true identity, and you, conscious awareness of our unity with you today, to be made forever free from all mistakes and to be saved from what we thought we were. The Pam Grout's Course in Miracles Experiment, Lesson 330, is titled, Who Wants to Know? And she quotes Pico Iyer. Pico said, the mind is the strutting actor on the stage who knows how to complicate the simple and unweave the rainbow. Pam writes, there's love, and then there's fear. There's the divine, and then there's the ego. One always makes you feel good, the other doesn't. I get to decide to which I'm going to listen. Lesson 330 says it's a no-brainer. Why hurt myself? Why give myself images of pain? Why do that when I can just as easily accept my freedom, indulge my joy, and it pays to stop and question who's asking? Is it the divine who's asking, or is it the ego? So that's our Course in Miracles experiment commentary and the Course in Miracles workbook lesson for today, day 330 out of the year. And as usual, we've got about 50 minutes to take your comments, questions, answers, soliloquies, commentaries, refutations. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, it will put a little hand up. Actually, a little icon of a hand is in the latest change addition to the Blog Talk Radio switchboard. If you put your hand up, I will click on that link and open up the phone lines and we can have a conversation. How can we support you today? As I've mentioned over the past few days, I have been working with another Pema Chodron book. And one of the things that came to me very, very strongly last night was how important it is to stop putting people and things on a pedestal. And it was quite shocking when this came to me so strongly. And I thought about talking about it on the internet show today, and then I thought, no, I really shouldn't do that. And here's what came to me. it is of ultimate importance that we quit putting anyone or anything on a pedestal, including God and Jesus or Yeshua. And as soon as I had that thought, I thought, well, I probably shouldn't share that with the internet show. That's going to be too... There are people who believe that Yeshua was the greatest teacher ever. And in a way, to my mind, that's like putting Yeshua on a pedestal. And, you know, Yeshua is the ancient Aramaic name for the one known in this culture today as Jesus. And if you look at, you know, if you take the time to start reading a wide variety of sources about the life of Jesus, and was there really a Jesus? Was there a real historical person, Jesus? What were his teachings meaning? And not from any particular religion, but from scholars and philosophers and the people that worked on Dr. Michael Rice's team of translators that were working to translate the Kabbalist manuscript, which is the oldest known copy of the New Testament, directly from the ancient Aramaic into English. What you hear over and over again is that, unlike what is purported in so many religions, what you hear is that Jesus or Yeshua was a man, just like any other man. And he maybe had a little bit deeper understanding from a much younger age about the importance of finding a different way to look at life than what was being kind of conditioned into us. And so he had perhaps a stronger passion for learning and questioning than the average person. And but that's it. He was a person like every other person. He had to be led and taught, and he had to work with exercises that helped him dismantle whatever you want to call it, of conditioning or brainwashing, and allow him to be in a... somewhat altered state more and more often throughout his life. And he had struggles. I mean, the movie The Mirror Theory, the book The Mirror Theory, which is, it just came into my life at the perfect time to be a really influential book. However, I was raised Catholic, so it was very much of a stretch, and I almost just put the book down after reading the intro, and because the intro and the premise of the book is that a teacher showed up at this woman's house, Betsy, his name was Charlie, at a time when she was very troubled in her life, and the teacher started talking to her about Jesus as a real person, when he grew up, the family he had, the lessons he learned from his interactions with each family member, you know, brothers, sisters, mother, father, aunts, uncles, cousins, whatever. And if it hadn't been that that book had been referred to me by someone I trusted and respected, I would have just dropped it at the intro. But that was one of the first books where just talking about Jesus or Yeshua as an actual person just like everybody else, with dynamics with siblings, with dynamics with parents, etc. One of the first ones that I made it all the way through. And then, of course, there's been, you know, several, probably several dozen books since then from scholars and from researchers and from philosophers, people who've heard the story. What are the missing years in Jesus' life? What happened from, you know, age 12 to 33 or whatever? And there are all kinds of different stories about how he was a traveler. He was hungry for knowledge, how he sought out teachers, and he did the work to change his ability to perceive and to try and move closer and closer to actuality rather than the conditioned upset that most of us are trained into. So if I put Jesus or Yeshua on a pedestal, if I look at him and say, oh, what a great teacher, oh, what great wisdom he had, I miss the truth. The truth is, you're no different than anybody that's ever lived in terms of your ability to access wisdom. One of the things that came to me to say a few years ago, it was in response to some conversations that were going on the internet show, and it just came to me so clearly. Listen, wisdom cannot be possessed. You don't have wisdom. I don't have wisdom. Yeshua didn't have wisdom. We can't possess it. And yet, everyone can access it. There is this connection to a higher level of mind and integration. There is a connection to the one mind, if you want to talk about it that way. Michael Rice talks about, from the ancient Aramaic, the name Ruka Dukudsha, and how it represents an elemental force specific to humans that's available to everybody. It's part of who you are at inception, at awareness, at your creation. And that elemental force specific to humans is there specifically for the purpose of being able to break off the effects of your errors in thought and guide you to truth and happiness if you just ask it to. So you have to have the willingness. You have to have what Michael Rice likes to say, in order to be sane, you have to be out of your mind. You've got to put the conscious logical mind aside. You're never going to, like Pema Chodron's book was saying the other day, your mind will never be able to comprehend enlightenment. So here's a really good exercise to get into when you sit down to meditate. Say to your mind, I know you're going to be chattering on with all kinds of thoughts while I'm meditating, and that's okay. I also want you to know, mind, I'm not the least bit interested in any thoughts that you can muster. The second thing to say to your mind is, I am interested in learning. I'm interested in learning about enlightenment, and no thought can show me enlightenment. So I need to step out of the conscious logical mind, and I need to ask to be shown. When I do that, I, just like anybody else, just like Yeshua, just like Muhammad, just like Gandhi, just like Krishnamurti, just like Mary Baker Eddy, just like any of these other great minds, I can get access to some wisdom. I will never possess it. It's a momentary thing that comes in the awakened moment, and it passes. Each moment is uniquely its own. So one moment I can have access to and act from some wisdom, some direct observation that's far closer to actuality, and the next moment I can be just as deaf, dumb, and blind as the people I despise most, which is a really good reason to give up despising people, to give up judgment at every level whenever I catch myself doing the judging. So, wisdom cannot be possessed. It can only be accessed. And if I move to put anyone or anything on a pedestal, including God, here's another thing that came to me a number of years back to say, only the ego wants to know God. Right? Because the ego has put God on a pedestal. And the ego has put God as something external. And the ego is that fear-based set of thoughts and images that come from having placed an artificial perception in the way of what used to be life and what used to be direct experience of life. At one point in the Course in Miracles, it says, perception was created as an attack on God, on what actually is. Right? So the perception are the pictures and thoughts that our minds make up . And as our minds, our brains make up those pictures, our brain tries to convince us that the pictures are a 100% infallible representation of what's going on in the world around us, when in truth, our minds can't even begin to approximate what's going on outside of us, because our brain only can focus on a tiny fraction of the input that's coming to our senses in each moment, and our senses are only picking up a tiny fraction of everything that's happening. And even our own science tells us that. Our science tells us our ears only hear a small range of the frequencies that we call vibrations, that when our ears register and we call them sounds, our eyes only see a narrow window of the vibration of energy that is called the light spectrum. There's ultraviolet we don't see, there's infrared we don't see, and Lord knows whatever else. And on and on. So no matter how concentrated, no matter how present in the moment we think we are, we will never understand actuality in its fullness, simply because we're relying on our senses to give us those pictures, and our senses are only picking up a tiny fraction of all that's there, and our conscious logical mind can only register a tiny fraction of everything that our senses pick up in each moment. So the questioning, the opening to question, you know, here's this definition of the Holy Spirit, or Rukha Dukkha, an elemental force specific to humans that's available to break off the effects of our errors in thought. Here it is. This is why Michael Rice includes the phrase sustained incoherence in each new worksheet. What is sustained incoherence? It's a term coined by the physicist David Bohm to stand for what happens when this process of thought, which is not, was never designed to help us understand our mental emotional processing. It's simply there to help us navigate through the physical realm, just like our perceptual mind. And it has specific flaws in the process, in the fundamental nature of thought itself, that continue to create problems for us in the realm of thought, in the realm of our emotional lives, in the realm of our relationships. So we use the thought, we create a problem, and then we think, oh, we better keep thinking until we solve the problem. But we're using a tool that creates more of the problem. So here is the definition for Rukha Dukkha, Holy Spirit. The description of it is an elemental force specific to humans that's our gift that's designed to help us break off the effects of our errors in thought. What does that mean? This definition of the Holy Spirit includes awareness that there's a problem with the process of thought. There's a fundamental problem with the process of thought. And the Holy Spirit is our way past that, to break off the effects of our errors in thought and guide us to truth and happiness. What do we have to do to get that benefit? Stand on our heads in a corner, go to church every Sunday, make pagan sacrifices? No. What we have to do to get that benefit is ask to be shown. Well, if I'm asking to be shown, and I'm asking, what am I asking? Who am I asking? Certainly not the priest, certainly not the rabbi, certainly not the minister, certainly not the police officer, certainly not the judge. I'm asking within the construct of my own consciousness. And I'm not creating an image of an outside deity or an outside teacher. I'm just asking within the confines of my consciousness to be shown. And when I do that, I'm not creating a pedestal. And I'm not placing anyone or anything on the pedestal. So this is what came to me, along with an immediate warning. Don't share this on the internet. But it came to me last night to say how important it is for every one of us to quit putting people and things, even God, up on a pedestal. And then not long after that came to me, I remembered, you know, there's places in the way of mastery where Jesus is talking and saying, and Yeshua is talking and saying, look, I can loan you my strength for a while, but eventually you're going to have to say, hey, Yeshua, stop, put me down. I want to climb off your shoulders. I need to get on with this on my own. Because where each of us needs to go in our own life and development cannot be done for us by someone or something outside of us. It must be done by the infinitely powerful forces inside of us that have nothing to do with our thoughts, with our school book learning, with our listening to gurus. It has to do with an internal process. There it is. I took the risk and I shared the thing that as soon as it came to me last night, the follow-up thought was, oh, you better not share this on the internet because that's going to rankle some people. So here's the invitation for today's show. Begin to notice where and how often and in what ways you put anyone or anything up on a pedestal, including Yeshua, including God, including your guru, your mentor. And just notice when that happens. And then step back and notice what results you get. And, you know, for some of us, it's going to be, there's some temporary positive results. There's going to be a nice buzz. There's going to be this sense of security. There's going to be this, wow, I'm following the smartest teacher that ever was, right? I'm on God's team. I'm in the right religion. I'm in the right cult, etc. And just keep observing, because the more I put somebody on a pedestal, the further I move myself from the work I need to do to experience the connection that's already in me to that source of wisdom. Remember, wisdom cannot be possessed. It can only be accessed. And everyone has access to it. So, that's our extended intro for today. Our call number is 563-999-3581. And I think there's about 25, 26, 27 minutes left. So we can take your comments, your questions, your refutations, any thoughts about the potential need to stop putting anyone or anything on a pedestal, including Yeshua, including God. Thoughts? Reactions? One of the things that comes to me is the story that's in Way of Mastery in the seventh lesson. And in the seventh lesson, there is a story that the title of the lesson is Birthing the Mind of Christ. And essentially, you know, this whole, the idea of the Christ mind work, the Course in Miracles, the Yeshua letters, the Way of Mastery is a trilogy of books. The idea of this is to bring into actuality on the planet many, many, many people who are able to tap into the Christ mind. It says, that which knows, that which comprehends immediately, that is the mind of Christ. So what keeps us from knowing immediately, connecting deeply with that inner source? What does? Fear. And in that lesson, lesson 7 about birthing the mind of Christ, what keeps us from birthing the mind of Christ more quickly, more easily, more efficiently? It's fear. And so, the truth that is true always is that you are as you were always created to be, that you and your Creator are one. Right? So it says, don't strive to heal the world. Don't do anything to make a show about how much you love another person. Give up the concept of being a busy bee. Simply be the presence of love. Be that because you know that there is absolutely no value in being anything else. And in truth, you've never succeeded at being anything but the presence of love. each sane moment that you've experienced, each moment of unlimitedness, each moment of genuine intimacy, each moment of grace-filled joy that you have ever known, in whatever form it seems to appear, has come because you've allowed your mind to slip into the sea of peace. And there you've merely abided, empty, wanting nothing, seeking nothing, being merely the presence of what you are. So what then could ever possibly arise to obstruct the truth that is true always, that you are one with your Creator in each and every present moment? So he tells a story. He says, there is an ancient forest on your planet, a forest so high in a rugged mountain valley and so rugged that no one has ever been there. Unknown to the minds of humanity, life goes on in the forest. Deep within the heart of this forest, this morning, a little tiny blade of grass seemed to be tossed by an unseen wind. As that blade of grass was tossed, for just a fragment of a moment, so subtle and soft was this wind that as the sunlight played against this blade of grass, it cast the smallest of conceivable shadows on a stone that was just a little bit away from the blade of grass. No one noticed. The shadow had no effect. The rock did not even notice. No one on the planet noticed. No one in any of the heavens noticed except me. You see, I needed something to build a story around. That tiny shadow cast by a little blade of grass momentarily wiggling in a wind in some remote forest has virtually no effect on the turning of the planets, the creation of new suns, and certainly not one trace of effect on how deeply the Father loves you. That little shadow is what you have been given power to. That little shadow is what you have given power to. For you, it seems to be able to obstruct the truth within you from being lived. For the moment, you gave that little tiny shadow power. In that very moment, fear was born. Fear is always a contraction away from love. And fear makes you smaller than the blade of grass in that momentarily seems to cast a tiny shadow and therefore obstructs your recognition of the warmth of the sun that bathes you always. So when you resist healing, when you struggle to learn to, quote, speak your truth, close quotes, you may rest assured that something has occurred just prior to that. What is it? It was your decision to believe that that tiny little shadow is all-powerful. It was your decision to believe that if you heal, if you grow, if you change, if you let the Christ mind live in you, that that little blade of grass and the little tiny shadow it creates for a very temporary moment will come up and punish you and crush you. If you can truly take this story into your being and recognize the utter laughability of such a belief, You will never again fear fear. You will never again allow fear to master you and direct the course of your life. This doesn't mean you won't feel fear. You will feel fear, but you'll recognize it. You'll step back and watch it. You'll observe it from the observer position. And move into the state of being, which paradoxically allows you to accomplish more in the realm of doing, when that doing is in line with the extension of this energy of love that is your true nature. Try to imagine for a moment that it is possible to create a pedestal for someone, and in the same moment, not create fear. I would offer that what you will observe is that every time I create a pedestal, every time I put God, love, Yeshua, my guru, my teacher, my father, my mother, every time I put someone on a pedestal, I am either creating or reinforcing, strengthening a conclusion that generates fear. Every time I think somebody else has an answer that I don't have, I create the fear that I won't get the answer that I need. I create the fear that I won't understand the answer as well as they understand it. And every move of that nature is counterproductive, moves me further and further from where I say I want to be. So how is it that you put people on a pedestal? How is it that you put God on a pedestal? How is it that you put a belief on a pedestal? And what would happen if you observed that continuously over time until you decided to withdraw, just to experiment? What would it be like? What would my existence be like if I withdrew my identification with this pedestal conclusion? That's our invitation for today. Notice more and more, day in and day out, moment to moment, where might I be putting someone or something up on a pedestal? One of the subtle tricks here is you might be able to convince yourself that you're not putting anybody else on a pedestal, and then in the next moment you have a thought where you're putting yourself down. And that negative self-talk screams at you in your head. Like Michael Singer talks about, you know, the nasty roommate in your head. Please observe as often as you can that even if you've managed to create a pattern in your mind thought where you're not putting somebody else up on a pedestal, every time you're putting yourself down, it means you're at least putting an ideal of what you could have been or should have been up on a pedestal. The negative self-talk is every bit as powerful a way of putting someone or something up on a pedestal as the positive talk about someone else. And we just want to offer for your observation, your direct observation in your own life, what happens when you put anyone up on a pedestal, anything up on a pedestal. And yes, we acknowledged earlier that yes, you might have a brief experience of positivity, whether it's a relief or a buzz, a high. Oh my gosh, it feels so good to be aligned with the perfect guru, to be aligned with God, to be aligned with truth. You might get that temporary buzz, but stick with it and watch what happens. Because if I put it on a pedestal, it, he, she, it, they, whether it's a belief or religion, the concept of God, etc. When I put it on a pedestal, I have clearly put it in my perception as something that's outside of me. And now, rather than turning inside and asking to be shown, rather than tapping into the internal source for wisdom that each one of us has been given, I'm looking outside of myself, and I'm creating a belief that I'm not as good as, and that I'm separate from that which I need in order to be whole and complete. So, the invitation for today is to catch as soon as possible, as often as possible, any inclination to put anyone or anything up on a pedestal, including God, including Yeshua, et cetera, et cetera. And this wasn't planned. This was just something that popped into my head last night at an opportune moment. And that's why we're sharing it today. Observations like wisdom cannot be possessed. It can only be accessed. And observations like every time I put anyone or anything up on a pedestal in my mind, I've created the hallucination, the illusion, that I'm separate from that person or thing, and that I don't have what they have, and that I need what they have, and that only through some kind of interaction with stuff outside of me can I reach safety, happiness, love, enlightenment, etc., whatever word you might want to use for that. And as we observe over and over again in this work, that's never been the case. That's a false belief. And the more we can eliminate our attachment to false beliefs, the closer we move to being able to experience the actuality of life directly, accurately. And that's what all this work is about. Two-prong approach. Number one, recognize the source within you for wisdom and divinity. Number two, be willing to use a tool to dismantle any negative thought or belief that you, or negative emotional experience you have that comes up that would refute the first observation of your wholeness, of your completeness. And we have specific tools for doing that available at whyagain.org, whyagain.org. Click on the red and white bullseye, download and read chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. Click on the direct link for the worksheet process, print it off and use it as often as you'd like. And then call us for support. We're here in our current format 2 hours a day, 5 days a week, and we enjoy sharing what we've learned about these tools and how beneficial they can be. And we've got about 8 or 9 minutes left. Time for a comment, question, observation, answer. 563-999-3581. Call that number. Press 1. Let us know how this is landing in you or for you. Let us know if there's a part of you that wants to refute this in any way, shape, or form. 563-999-3581. We have a support group coming up next Tuesday and next Thursday. We have the weekend ahead of us. I hope people continue their gratitude practice throughout the weekend, and you come loaded for action and interaction on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday next week. Bring your comments, bring your questions, bring your experiences from the weekend, and let us know how we can help you with the application of the tools to anything that your experience has revealed that's less than love. So, comments, questions, answers. We're here. We have Michael and Jeannie coming up in the next hour. I don't know if they'll be live or doing a best of show, but as I mentioned, we have, I'm going to do my best to play the interview I did with Richard Moss on next Tuesday, because I will be busy doing another interview. And I would just strongly encourage you, once again, we do this every once in a while, to take advantage of the archives. The archives of the past nearly 11 years now are available. Some of them have been curated out by Jeannie to be highlight shows, but some people also like to just spin the wheel and go to whyagain.org, whyagain.org, and click on the microphone, the picture of the microphone, and then get over to the archives and just, you know, randomly pick a date and listen to a show. The first 8 years of this internet podcast were 1 hour, 5 days a week, and the last nearly 3 years has been 2 hours, 5 days a week. So there's no lack of audio files to listen to and content to engage in. I used to like, when the weather was better, I used to like loading up one of those shows and then get on my two-wheel bike and ride out in the country. Occasionally just listening to the ambient sounds and the birds, and sometimes listening to the podcast. So take advantage of that. It's another free resource. Take advantage of all of the worksheets that are available. Whyagain.org. Scroll down that page and look at the reality management worksheet, the three early memories of conflict worksheet, the codependent to interdependent worksheet, the mind shifter targeted journaling tool. The list goes on. There are a host of worksheets there that can assist you in your work, in your process, and we invite you to take advantage of them. They're absolutely free. You can also choose, if you find this work valuable and you've got financial resources, you can choose to donate to support Michael and Jeannie, because they spend a lot of their time, intelligence, money, and energy making this available, the website and the all the resources and the internet show, and they have to spend money for all of it to make it happen. And yet they don't demand any money in return. They're just relying on people to choose to donate if they feel like this work's been of value to them. So there's a donate button there. You can click on it and use it soon and often if you have specific skills and you don't have money. You can email Jeannie at Jeannie at WHYAGAIN.org and talk about how you might be willing to support this work or this effort through the application of your skills. I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. I hope you had a good Thanksgiving yesterday.
We did. Hope you had one as well.
We did.
Hope you continue to have a blessed weekend.
Thank you. You too. Appreciate you.
All right. Take care.
All right. Okay. Bye. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Friday, November the 26th, 2021. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And you press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. And we'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. We're on just a little bit early, so I'll just go ahead and say that we had gotten a request from someone who said that they thought that it would be an awesome tool to have, but also something to add to our repertoire of tools and get the word out. And that is, they thought it would be good to take, you know, last year Michael did the Course in Miracles each day. This year Dr. Tim has done it and said, you know, why didn't we take all of those Course in Miracle lessons and combine them and make a daily MP3 of all the Course in Miracles. And I said, well, you know, that is an awesome idea. However, that means that you'd be, let me pull up the numbers here. I said, that means we would be taking 52 weeks of 5 shows a week times 2, because we did it for 2 different years. Tim did it and Michael did it. We're talking about downloading 520 shows and editing out just the portion of the Course in Miracles and then converting that over to an MP3. I said, that's a lot of work, and I don't have that time. So we're putting it out there that if, you know, Dr. Tim was just announcing about, you know, if you didn't have money but you had some skills, if you have the skill and the software equipment to be able to do that, to download all of those shows and then edit out, and then that would be awesome. It'd be an awesome way to support us in the work and to provide a tool that could be used in the future by everybody. So if that's something that you can do, then please let us know. You can, if you've got our phone numbers, you can call us or drop me a line at Jeannie, J-E-A-N-I-E, at whyagain.org, and let me know that you're willing to do that. All of those shows are on the website under the archives, and so you would just click on the download button, download it to your computer. You'd have to have an editing program then where you could open it up and clip out, like where it does the welcome to the radio show, and then click out, edit out all the part beyond the Course in Miracles lesson. And then you'd have to take each of those, and they were suggesting that we took, like where Michael did, say, January the 1st and his lesson on that course, and then Dr. Tim's lesson that he did January the 1st, and putting those two together so that when you clicked on January the 1st that you could hear both of them giving the synopsis of that lesson. And so, like I said, you know, that's quite a bit of work, and we're talking of 520 shows that would need to be edited. It would be an awesome tool for us to have. So if that's a skill and something you're willing to take on, you've got the time and the energy for that, then, you know, drop us a line and let us know. And we would appreciate that. There are a lot of areas where we could use support other than monetary. You know, we've announced that Julie's got a gentleman there, and between the two of them, they're getting the heartland cleared up, you know, with all the falling leaves, and it's right in the middle of the woods. So it's easier to clean it up now than in the spring when everything starts growing back and the vines and the weeds and starts blooming again. It's just a whole lot easier to get it cleaned up when everything's kind of in the dormant state. And so that costs money. I mean, we're not even there and operating it, but we have to keep it up. So if you want to donate to that project, we also, I was with India again this morning talking to the techs and going over what I wanted on the new app, and he's getting really close to having that. So probably if he finishes it up today or tomorrow, and then he has to submit it, the changes to both Google and iPhone. So probably by the end of next week, we'll have that app going again. And it's fabulous, the things that we've added to it. It's besides having the two worksheets and the Dragon Klingon game, and the commitments, it now has a button that you can click and it will take you immediately to any events that we have going on. Of course, everything that we're doing right now is by Zoom, and so it lets you know that. We also have two different online memberships. We have the communication, codependence communication, self-study, 90-hour self-study. So that's out there under the events. The monthly membership, you can do it 1 month, 3 months, or a whole year to do Still Point Breathing with us. We're doing that the second Saturday of each month, followed by the next Tuesday. It had been Wednesday, and we changed it to Tuesday because some of the people that have signed up for the year, Tuesdays were easier for them to participate than Wednesday. They already had prior commitments on Wednesdays. And so that's going to be on Tuesday then that we do the support session after the breathwork. So that's under events. And then anything else, like Michael is going to be part of the Coptic conference by Zoom, and that'll be in January. So we will be putting information on the events page about that and how you can participate in that. And so that one button on the app, you'll be able to go directly to all the events that are going on. There'll be another button that says More, and it will take you to our website where there are special links, information, just all the worksheets other than the two forgiveness worksheets that are on the app. And so there'll be a lot of information there for that. And then there's a button that will take you directly to how you can access, other than calling in, how you can access the radio show, whether it's archives or live or podcast. And so it'll take you directly to that. And then the biggie is, no matter what page you're on in the app, no matter whether it's the abbreviated version, the Dragon Klingon, or the current seven step, or the commitment page, wherever you are, there will be a button that says Ask a Question. And you can click it, and it will take you to where you put in your name, email, and ask your question. And we tell you on that page that we will address that question on a radio show, and we will email you back and let you know the date and the time where we addressed it so that you can go and hear your answer. And then you can just click a back button and it'll take you right back to the screen that you were on. So if you are halfway through a worksheet and a question pops up, you'll be able to hit that, write your question, send it, and then get right back to where you were in the middle of the worksheet. So we're working on all that, and we hope maybe by the end of next week that we'll have that up. Well, that project's, you know, that's costing us. So if you want to support the continuation of us developing that, you know, there's a donate button, or if you have a PayPal account, you can send it, you know, as a, there's a option of send money to family and friends. And if you click that, it doesn't charge you or us a fee. And so that's, you know, just some ways that you can support us. And then if you think of something else that, you know, I jokingly told this person, well, that if they were at Heartland and they made a suggestion for, oh, you should do this, then we always say, oh, okay, that's a good idea. It's yours. Go for it. Develop it. Do it. And so, you know, if you have an idea and you're willing to take that on, just drop us a line, let us know. That's fabulous. You know, there are so many ways you can support this work other than financially. And finances helps tremendously, especially since we're not traveling. And so, you know, just let us know how you're willing to step in, and we appreciate you. And Michael's on with us now, so I'll say welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart. And the app is taking on a whole new level of functionality. What excites me most about it, you know, our website is 20,000 pages or so, maybe more now. And from the app, you can just go bing, 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 bing right into different parts of the website. So if you need support with anything you're doing, then the app will take you right into the website. It's kind of like a gateway into the website, and I'm excited about that. That's pretty cool. And then, of course, questions pop up in the middle of a step in the worksheet, and you can stay with that worksheet that you're doing, but just click the question button, and that'll send a question right to us, and you can just continue with your worksheet. So it looks like a way to formulate more clarity, you know. I approached the worksheet after started development 40 years ago, so my brain cells are kind of like, well, I know this, how this works, but for someone who is new to it, having the ability to just click and ask a question is, you know, like the person who teaches a computer, what did I skip over that's an important step, because those steps are combined into one in my mind, but in learning it, you know, as we talked about in the session on building brain cells from the book, it's a process to learn the steps of doing forgiveness. So it's really exciting to see how it's developing, and who knows what the next step will be. We'll see what unfolds. But we appreciate you lending your ears to it and asking your questions. Questions are so important to the process because, you know, you may have a question that I asked myself 37 years ago on doing the worksheet or on the forgiveness process, and I've long since, you know, bypassed the idea that that question's important because I already got the answer. But if you don't have the answer, it's an important question. And sometimes people say, well, my questions aren't that important. Yeah, please, every question, even the smallest little thing around this process, you know, building brain cells, the smallest little thing can be really important in opening up understanding, and maybe not just for you. And sometimes maybe the question really isn't for you. It might be somebody else on the radio show that doesn't even know they have that question. So we deeply appreciate your participation and assisting us in taking this further and further afield. We have many, many projects underway to flesh out and expand the availability of the tools. And as Jeannie says, if you choose to support us, if you're benefiting from it, please find a way to support us, create a way to support us. In the meantime, of course, we've entered into full blast the holiday season, or what I'd like to refer to as the Holy Day season, H-O-L-Y-D-A-Y, and that really the idea, especially of the upcoming Christmas season or Hanukkah or Kwanzaa, I don't have the brain cells really fully firmed for that celebration, but the idea of these holy days, and I specifically refer to holy as whole, it doesn't have to do with your hands being folded and down on your knees. It's about developing and becoming whole in your expression as a human being, about discovering who you really are and bringing that into whole, full expression into the world through your form. And so this, make sure to give some time to your inner work in this season. You know, it's not about running off and getting drunk. In fact, you know, one of the things I usually post this time of year is the disaster. And I have no moral qualms about somebody drinking. It's got nothing to do with that, but the disaster that is created on the earth by alcohol. I mean, I'll dig them out and share them probably later in the month. But the number of deaths, the number of attacks, the number of automobile accidents, the number of maimed lives. It just goes on and on and on. And you know, I'm like, who in their right mind would put that stuff in their bodies? And of course, the answer is obvious when you understand this work. Those who experience it as an anesthetic that takes away their pain. You know, they call it alcohol a social lubricant. What's a social lubricant? It means that I have fear, and after three shots of, you know, vodka, the brain cells that represent my fear are anesthetized. I don't feel that fear anymore. Well, we've got a very popular song related to alcohol, Feeling No Pain. The other thing that most people don't understand about alcohol is that the first thing, you take two molecules of alcohol and take the water out, you've got ether. And the first thing that ether does, and if you've ever talked to somebody who's an anesthetician, somebody who anesthetizes people, oh, the stuff they hear. Because the inhibitors are knocked out of the brain. And those things that people have hidden from themselves, have not dealt with, behaviors that they've been told they're bad, they're wrong, don't ever do them, those things that have been inhibited, first thing that goes with alcohol is the inhibitors are knocked out. That's why people do behaviors that they say, oh my God, I would never do that. I don't even remember doing that. Yeah. Well, the behaviors are there. The alcoholic says, oh, and I will never do that again. You told me what I did last night. That's so terrible. I would never do that. Well, excuse me. You did do that. So you would. First of all, be honest with yourself. And two, why would you do it? Because the behavior's in there. And you can promise till the cows come home you'll never do it again. But if you never go in and forgive the content of the brain cells being that hold that behavior, then under the right circumstances, under the right stresses, once again, those behaviors will come forward. You might remember the ancient scriptures where they were talking about this principle. They were talking about real life stuff, not what's been turned into religion. It says, nothing will remain hidden. Everything will be made known in the light of day. Well, unfortunately, a lot of it's made known under the darkness of alcohol. And so when we wake up to who we are and start to function as human beings, that game changes, and we're looking to support. 7.5 billion people at this point living as human beings, really truly living as love. And we're going to go to the Aramaic solution. What's the solution to that dilemma? And we started out the book with the dilemma. And what is the dilemma? Well, let's go back to that page. This is Roman numeral XIX. The dilemma. The mass of men, this is a quote from Henry David Thoreau, the mass of men lead lives of quiet desperation. What is called resignation is confirmed desperation. From the desperate city, people go into the desperate country and have to console themselves with the bravery of minks and muskrats. In other words, they go out and kill things that are helpless. The stereotype of unconscious despair is concealed even under what are called the games and the amusements of mankind. You know, you look at how many times people, you know, what are they at the football game for? What do they want to see? They want to see the fight. They want to see the violence because there's an inhibited internal violence in them that resonates or attracts them to that. When we give that up, to watch that violence take place becomes abhorrent. The only reason anyone would glorify in it is because it's in them and it's what pulls them to it. And then Thoreau finishes that quote off that says, to be awake is to be alive. I never met a man who is quite awake. So that's the dilemma we laid out at the beginning of the book. And then we offer a solution from Henry David Thoreau, and he says this: if you advance confidently in the direction of your dreams and endeavor to live the life you have imagined, You will meet with success unexpected in common hours. You will pass an invisible boundary. If you built castles in the air, your work need not be lost. That is where they should be. Now put a foundation under them. So we were given the ability to dream. We were given the ability to tap into a vision of what's possible in our lives. And if we've been brainwashed by the culture to keep that vision hidden or locked down, or if we've been taught that we're unworthy of it, then it is disappeared. It's time for us to wake that back up again. And so I've been talking to Richard. We just started yesterday the Aramaic Solution, chapter 23 in the book. We're on bottom of page 151, if you're following us. And I've just said to Richard that, you know, the world would say, the culture says, well, forgive your brother. And that would never be said in Aramaic. And so Richard says, well, what would they say? Turn the page and go to page 152. The statement would be, forgive as to your brother. Richard says, wait a minute. He broke in and he stood and stretched. You're losing me. Give me a moment to put it all together and see if what I'm saying fits. Does it make sense to you to define reality as the output of the mind? Can you accept that we're each responsible for our own realities? Okay, I'm with you so far. If I am functioning responsibly and you bring a reality, let's say fear, to the surface for me, is there anything I should be forgiving you for? Well, if you look at it that way, no, because I've just triggered your fear, not caused it. I guess you could say I've given you an opportunity to get rid of that fear, he conceded. Hey, you know, I've actually given you an opportunity to get rid of something that was hurting you, even though you weren't aware that it was causing your pain or diseasing you. Exactly. The difference is that when I use the misunderstood form of forgiveness to forgive you, I must first blame or project onto you. In the Aramaic concept, each person takes responsibility for the content and output of his or her mind. When you engage in true forgiveness, you cancel what you want from your own mind. Strange as it may sound, this allows your projections to be undone and healing to occur. At first, this is usually a difficult concept to grasp when applied to practical situations, but in our programmed experience of the world, it seems like it is other people who make us feel what we feel. Let's discuss the theory behind why this process works a little later. So those two little words, every time in the Aramaic language, if you read the Greek translations of the Aramaic scriptures, you hear Yeshua saying, forgive your brother, forgive your father, forgive your mother, forgive, 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 forgive yourself. And those words never occur there. In Aramaic, those two little words, as to. So in Aramaic, what Yeshua was saying is, if you're in disturbance, if you're in pain, and you're blaming somebody for that, whatever that disturbance or pain is, the person who brought it up for you is giving you a gift. And you don't forgive that person, but you forgive as to your brother. You forgive what comes up in you that your brother has resonated for you and in you. So that just literally turns around the whole concept of forgiveness. And when you begin to apply that tool of forgiveness, wow, the acceleration in healing, the process that occurs is just beyond the average person's comprehension. And so we have a worksheet process where we're going to go through this chapter 23, and we've got about a month left now of the year, so we'll go through chapter 23, the Aramaic Solution, and then in chapter 24 we'll actually go into and cover the step-by-step forgiveness process. Suffice to say that if you're actually going to reach that which is hidden in your mind, you're going to have to remove what preoccupies your mind. And so that's precisely what first century Aramaic forgiveness does. The word forgive in Aramaic, and we'll say this over and over again until we get through to the end of the year, the solution, because we've been so programmed in a backward-thinking society that at first it doesn't make any sense to, you know, take a perfectly good goal. And you'll recall we've talked over and over about the fact that you're never upset with people unless they're, or with yourself, unless you or they are violating a goal that you hold for them. And once you recognize that the way the mind works, and it took me decades to understand this, because this information isn't available anywhere in the world. You know, whoever told you that a goal is the driver, whoever informed you that your goals determine the perceptual constructs of your mind, that literally the way you see the world. And so when you realize that that's what drives perception, and perception is all a construct of the mind that makes it look like our content is what's happening in the world. So content becomes what we visually see in our brains. And what we visually see in our brains, we see in our brains because it's in our brain. It's not out there in the world. But we've been fooled. We've been fooled into thinking that because I think I see it out there, it must be out there. But as we've asked before, you know, you ever taken the geographic here and notice you go to the other side of the country where you hope people will be different, and the person that picks you up at the airport finishes the sentence that the person that dropped you off started? How does this work? What's the game? Well, if you hold content based in hostility or fear, then when you load a goal that activates or resonates that content, then your mind is going to generate a picture world that reflects that content, and you'll swear that the picture world is out there. But the mind is using corrupt data when hostility or fear shows up. And so once I recognize that, then I can take control of my own perceptual system, and I've got a pathway. Now that I understand forgiveness, I've got a pathway into my own unconscious to clean it up. And you remember in the ancient scriptures, they said, take care of the heart. And that word heart in our modern updated language would be the unconscious. Take care of the unconscious, for out of it are the issues in life. Well, how do you take care of the unconscious if you don't know how to get into it, if you don't know how to open it or access it? This brilliant mind 2,000 years ago taught us exactly how to access it. Take the moment where you are at the peak of your upset and disturbance. Notice who your object of attention is, self or others, doesn't matter. Might be the world. It might be what's sitting on your dinner plate. It doesn't matter. Whatever the object of attention is. And then notice the goal that you hold for that object of attention. That goal, what's the outcome you want in that situation? Now, let's say it's something wonderful, like I just want that person to cherish me and speak to me lovingly. What does forgiveness look like in that context, if someone's speaking to me in an uncharitable way and I go into rage? I forgive not my brother for speaking that way. I forgive as to what came up in me. I need to forgive my rage. That's the Aramaic solution. And when I forgive as to my rage, I literally, how I do that, how I get to the unconscious dynamic of rage in me, is I cancel the goal that I hold for whoever or whatever the object of attention is. You know, I've worked with women who put a plate of food down on the table and had their spouse go into a fit of rage. I said I wanted this for dinner. Well, there's the goal. And he got that. Now, of course, he's not upset about what's on the dinner plate. The upset, the rage, is something in his mind. And when he loads a goal into his mind, the mind triggers that rage and projects it into his brain's image of the person who put the plate in front of him. When he cancels the goal, he can short-circuit the whole blame game, and it's all your fault, and go inside himself and find the root of his rage that's hidden in his heart, his unconscious, and remove it. And when he removes the rage from his unconscious, he's removing the disease from his tissue structure, from his physiological expression. When we put an energy that doesn't belong in this human energy system into the system, we have, in the ancient Aramaic context, sinned. Now, the word sin has got nothing to do with what the Greeks taught us. It's a very practical, simple, straightforward concept. If you go out on the archery range and you fire at the target and you miss the bullseye, scorekeeper yells sin. It's got nothing to do with you being evil, bad, wrong, nasty, dirty, you know, any of that. And certainly is not your identity, but you have engaged in an energy that's off the mark. When you engage in energy that's off the mark and you lock that energy somewhere in tissue, what happens? That tissue is diseased and begins to die. The wages of sin is death. It's nothing religious about it, nothing theological about it. It's just information. Here's how your energy field works. And if you're experiencing suffering and pain and diseases in your structure, then you better start looking at what you're doing to assault your own structure and begin to forgive as to what someone else shows you, because life is designed. You know, it seems like the Creator abhors us being diseased, and so the whole system is designed that if we're entering into an unconscious disease process, somebody's going to show up to kick us in a limitation. Somebody's going to show up to bring up and inform us of what it is we are holding on to as our disease. If we stay in denial and we want to keep that hidden, then we'll take the disease energy that they've resonated in us and we'll use that energy and project it into our brain's image of them. And so a body called, you know, person XYZ shows up in my mind with my pain and my disintegrative energy attached. And I'm sure it must be their fault, but then, of course... If you've asked yourself the question, why is this happening to me again? You know you've been through it 87 different times with 42 different people. Who do you suppose has the problem? Who do you suppose needs the forgiveness? The person with the pain and the disturbance and the upset is the one with the problem. Now, minds will go to all kinds of extreme lengths to explain how I'm only upset because of you. Liar, liar, pants on fire. That's just a total, complete fraud. The one who's in disturbance and upset is the one with the problem. If I'm in pain, my thinking is in error. I need to correct my thought disorders. Forgiveness corrects thought disorders. If you go back and, you know, and whatever the pain is, whatever the turmoil is, whatever the situation is in your life, and you're going to say, Michael, what do I do about this? You can go back to day one in the archives. You know, this workshop has been going on for 10 years on this show, 5 days a week, an hour. The last couple of years, it's been 2 hours a day with Dr. Tim and with our show. Go back to day one and start listening. And the only thing you'll ever hear me address, the only thing you'll ever hear Jeannie talk about, the only thing you'll ever hear Dr. Tim talk about, the only thing you'll ever hear Michelle talk about is the resolution of thought disorders, the healing of sin, of energetic patterns that are off the mark that create our diseases mentally, physically, emotionally, or financially, or in relationships. So this whole technology is about how to take care of your heart, take care of and clean up your unconscious. Pages on the website, all dedicated to that one idea. It's all about how to approach, open, and relieve your own unconscious of what never belonged, which means you're going to begin to look at generational patterns. You're going to be getting to be look, You're going to get to look at cultural patterns. You're going to get to look at anything that's off the mark. People will learn about this process and get all excited and say, oh boy, but then never put a pen to the paper and do the worksheet process. Our invitation to you is to actually put the tool to work. You can go to our website, whyagain.org, and you can do the worksheet right there on the website live. You can print off a copy of it if you choose. You're the only one who will have access to it, so you can tell it anything. You can go to your app store in your phone and type in the words Heartland, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. You'll be looking at the world's only forgiveness app, which, as Jeannie shared, is expanding in its functionality. It's going to really open up the whole website for you and give you an easy way to ask questions when the questions come up. On the app, once you download it, and it's specifically designed for almost no permissions. The only permission it asks for is permission for the app to use the internet so it can function. If, when you end a worksheet, you actually want to print a PDF of it to save it, it will ask permission, of course, to store it on your hard drive. Otherwise, there are no permissions involved. We understand that people put very, very private things into this tool, and we specifically designed it so that there is no possibility of access in any way, shape, or form to the work that you do on the app. We have no way to access what you do. It's totally and completely on your phone. And if you print it, the record will be kept on your phone. So we purposely designed it so people would feel, would trust and be safe and secure in utilizing the tool. So go to your app store, Heartland, H-E-R-T-L-A-N-D, Aramaic Forgiveness. And within probably a week to 2 weeks, the next upgrade to the app will be available. And you'll be able to ask questions right there from each step, it floats on each page, and then there'll be a more button that you can go and access, navigate all through the website. So, Miss Jeannie, it looks like we've got about 25 or 26 minutes left. Do we have anybody out there in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
No, it is all quiet out here. We have some new numbers that we've not had before, so I'm not sure who those listeners are, and we're glad that you're with us. And if you have a question or comment, press 1, and we're here to support you.
Hey, and if you're new to the show, we'd love to just become acquainted and push 1 and say hello and
those,
you know, introduce
yourself.
Those
of you that are on the switchboard that are regulars, we'd like to hear from you as well.
How'd your Thanksgiving go? How is your holy day season opening up? Are you facing any challenges? Can we support you in any way? Push 1 and let's have a conversation. We've got lots of time for some deep level conversations. How can we support you? What's on your mind? Or do you have anything else to share, Jeannie? Anything else to talk about?
I think I did all my sharing yesterday. And if you didn't hear the show, you can go back and listen to my gratitude. And we have the little one with us today. We hadn't had her in a week, and so it's been a blessing this morning.
And you were busy on the switchboard when I came upstairs to get on the show with you, sweetie. And I noticed that the bedroom door was open. And so I went over to close it, and it wasn't until I looked in the bed and saw she wasn't there that I looked down, and she was down, crouched on her hands and knees, looking around the corner at you. First time she'd done that. What are you doing out of bed? You're supposed to be resting. She said, I need a drink. So I said, okay, well, you go out back in bed, and I'll go get you a drink for you. So I got her. That's why I came in there and got her a drink. And So, but that's the first time I've seen her. She's cute. She's just crouched down. You're just peeking around the corner at you.
Aw.
So if you're out there in listener land, what's on your mind? How can we support you? The purpose of this show is to bring home every aspect of first century Aramaic forgiveness that we can bring to mind for you. And so it's time for the monologue to be over and time for the dialogue to happen. So if you're out there and listening, don't wait till the last minute. Now's the time to push one. What's on your mind? If nothing else, if you're new to the show, just say hello. Just push one and introduce yourself. And if you don't want to use your real name, don't use your real name. But tell us where you're from, how you learned about forgiveness, how you learned about this radio show, what brought you here, and how can we support you? Maybe we'll just do a few silent moments till somebody pushes the button. And the button, of course, is one on your phone. And through the magic of technology, that raises a hand in the control panel.
You just cut out, Michael. I think you start to say in the control panel.
Strange.
And I can't. There you are. Yeah.
That was weird.
And for those of you who may be new and aren't familiar with the app, if you go to your app store, whether it's Google's Play Store or whether it's the Apple iPhone store or whatever, just type in Heartland, one word, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness. It'll pop up. It's a glowing red heart, and you'll see a picture of Michael and myself. And it's a free download. And if you're not familiar with it, but you've done maybe perhaps done the worksheets before, you know, the worksheets will start out with an issue and your object of attention and what you're feeling and your thoughts and all of that and your goal. Well, since you're doing it electronically and so you don't see it right in front of you, you know, you don't see all seven steps at one time in front of you. What the app does is when you get to another part that references back to, say, the object of attention, it will automatically fill that in the app so that you don't have to remember, you know, I'm halfway through the worksheet and I went off on a hydra and forgot who I was doing the worksheet on or something like that. So it automatically fills in those thoughts, feelings, and the object tension and all of that as you're going along. And so, you know, it makes it very easy. You can also do it on your computer on the website as well as the apps on your phone. And all of that is free. And then we're here to answer questions. There are things on the website, like I've had people say that they didn't have anything to do a worksheet on. So there's actually even a link on the website that says, for those who have no issues. And so there's just lots and lots of information, and we're here to support you. And you can do a worksheet on positive things. You know, most people think of doing a worksheet around their anger, their fear, or their sadness. But if you think something outside of you makes you happy or makes you joyful or whatever, you can do a worksheet on that too, because things outside of us trigger it, but it doesn't cause whatever it is we're feeling, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. And so you can do the worksheet on a number of things. And then we're here 5 days a week to support you, answer questions, direct you. There's, you know, we have a lot of different worksheets besides the forgiveness worksheet. And so there's even a link out there that says, what tool do I use when? And, what, you know, do I use the communication tool? Do I use the codependence tool? What do I use in what situation? And so there's guidance in that as well. There's a PowerPoint presentation that explains the forgiveness process. So there's lots of information. Go to whyagain.org. And you can click the Start Here button. That will take you to where all the worksheets are. And that's a good place to start, a good explanation of the work. You can click on, you know, about Michael or about Jeannie or, you know, about the work or whatever. And there's just lots of information out there. And we always say, you know, don't believe anything, but put the tools to work in your life and you'll see that things change. That's my commercial.
Well, that was a good one, hey? Thank you for that intro to the app and to the website. And, of course, the idea with these tools is that you actually use them. You know, if you tools and you don't use them, it's the same as not having tools. And so our objective here is to give you the advantage of having available the research work of decades. And it's, you know, not the kind of thing the average person is going to take decades to do. So we've taken every piece, every tool that we've come across in working with the ancient Aramaic, and then to bring it into the practical. Here's how it works. Here's where it applies. And so we're here to support you in making these tools practical and making them workable in your world. And we've got about 20 minutes. We would love to hear your questions, your thoughts. What's on your mind? How can we support you? Call in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you'll be listening to the show. If you push 1, we will be having a conversation. So what's on your mind? Came across an interesting quote yesterday from Winston Churchill, and he was addressing the conflicts that move forward in the world and how people say to himself, well, how could that possibly happen? And he used a word that, you know, isn't really, you know, kind of word we use necessarily today. I would probably substitute the word vicious for the word wicked in his quote. But he says, you know, why do things that are so destructive to humanity put forward? And he says it's the malice of the vicious aided by the virtue. Pardon me, aided by the weakness of the virtuous. In other words, when good people stand around and do nothing, that the insanity in the world prospers. And we've certainly got lots of that happening right now. And what do we call in this work? What do we call an insane mind? An insane mind, we're not talking about an asylum type definition of insane. If you take on this definition, you'll catch insanity a whole lot sooner, and you'll probably never end up in any kind of an institution for mental disorders, because insanity is a mind that's working without love. If you realize that you're insane, then it's time to go to work and get back to a connected space where love is literally the power supply for your mind. If you go to the Aramaic language, when they asked the man Yeshua, well, what's most important about being a human being? He doesn't say, love God, love your neighbor, as you love yourself. He says, have rachma, a filter in the frontal lobes of your brain, a gateway that allows human life, love, into your human form, so that the human form is powered by love. So you want to be sane? You got to be human. If you're going to be human, hold a newborn child and notice the essence of the newborn is love, period. It's our human lives, and it's been brainwashed out of us by the vicious and the insane. And when we choose to step up to the plate as one who stands for decency and truth. We hear people telling all kinds of lies. You know, I'm for law and order, and then violating the law at every turn. I was reading an article today, and it kind of turned that whole thing around, and someone in an authority position, without getting into the politics of it because it was politics, but someone in an authority position, they're calling him down for not doing what this particular writer wanted them to do. And the person who politically had committed to doing it didn't. And the particular writer was dissing them for not doing it. But then when you start to look at it, into it, it's like, oh, well, the judge said this is what's required. This is the judgment that the court has adjudicated, and therefore this is what will be done. So this person who'd made a promise to do the opposite but was forced by a judge to do it, and this writer is just totally out of integrity. And, well, you broke your word. And I was like, no, he didn't break his word. I, for one, when I look at all of the illegalities done by people who said they were about law and order, think it's really cool that even though it goes against his principles, he stands up for actual law and order. A judge said this, and until we get that handled, that's what we're going to do, because that's how a civil society works. So the virtuous, those who would harmonize with truth and with law and order, need to steel themselves and strengthen themselves and do what is in alignment with the law. And so I thought that was an interesting quote from Winston Churchill. Evil happens in an evil, and by the way, evil in Aramaic is very much is related to the word sin. It's another archery term. And when you fired the bullseye and you missed the bullseye, the scorekeeper yelled sin. If you missed the target altogether, the scorekeeper would yell evil. So how does evil go forward? Malice of the vicious, aided by weakness of the virtuous. Good call, Winston. Time for us to wake up. Time for us to be ready to function as human beings and to do our part in bringing forward a world that's based in truth and love. And so how can we support you? Have you got anything? We're down to about 13 minutes. If we don't have anyone with a question, then I'm about ready to call the show for today. Don't have any other dialogue plans, so I'm willing to let go if we don't have a question or a thought out there. If you're listening and you have a thought for us, we'd love to hear your voice. We'd prefer to continue the show through to the top of the hour. Conversation's complete. Then, Miss Jeannie, why don't we just wish everybody the best year yet of your eternal lives, happy, safe, holy days, and thanks for joining us. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pache, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.